Oh, the shame that will get if you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
And you're very welcome along to Team 33 and a call here with you until about 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up on tonight's show, we are on to week two of our football films reviews, and we're looking at a big one. Mike Bassett, England manager, a classic of the comedy genre and a really, really good film as well overall. But first, there is actual football news. The Premier League has announced it is coming back in the 17th of June. Hallelujah. Football without fans, yeah, it's not great, it's not perfect, but it is definitely better than no football at all. And I think that's been proven with the Bundesliga that has been really good over the last couple of weeks. It is more or less over, though, after Dortmund got beat by Bayern on Tuesday night. A delicious chip from Joshua Kimmich. It's just a pity that the keeper actually got a hand on it because it would have been a beauty of a goal otherwise. And really and truly, that's the Bundesliga title wrapped up. But there's still loads to play for in terms of the Champions League results. RB Leipzig dropped points to Hertha Berlin. Leverkusen also dropped points to Wolfsburg. That was a shock of the week. And it's really heating up in that league. So it'll be brilliant to get that going and brilliant to get the Premier League back. And hopefully it all comes off without a hitch and we don't look back on the Premier League's return in 2020 as something that we regret. Because obviously Britain is in a different situation than Germany in terms of COVID cases and deaths. So fingers crossed the Premier League won't look back on this with regret. Anyway, tonight is not about the Premier League. Tonight is about international football, the World Cup, and the man himself, Mike Bassett, England manager.
This is the story of one very proud Englishman.
First met Mike back in 1975.
A loyal, steadfast family man.
Just wish my dad could see me now, you know, he was like a father figure to me.
30 years later, he got a free transfer to Plymouth, then to Hull, Grimsby and Darlington.
What was it that attracted you to him?
The glamour.
An unlikely hero who hailed from football's lower leagues and in their desperate hour of need answered his nation's call.
A new manager to take us into the World Cup. So you know where we're going to have to start, Luke?
Scandinavia.
England.
To command.
Oh, Christ.
Centre stage in the greatest game the world has ever known. A man with one ambition.
To win the World Cup.
But first, he has to qualify.
This. That.
We invented football and we gave it to the world. Well, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to bring it back.
Put it away, son!
Mike Bassett, the master tactician.
An old-fashioned manager and the player's simple. 4-4-2.
3-5-1-1.
3-1-2-1-2-1 formation.
A man who's known football's highs. And it's Lowe's.
Well done, Poland.
Terrible. Terrible shape. Terrible team.
Unsettled. What sort of bloody injury is that?
In order to be at one with the ball, you must ultimately become the ball.
But with a little help from elsewhere,
Luxembourg are winning.
You're joking.
He steers his team to the World Cup finals in Brazil. And to fly his nation's flag with pride.
England qualify.
Holding the team together. With a combination of inspirational leadership. And raw, bloody passion. But when it's time to be counted, when the chips are down, when the going gets tough.
This is the last roll of the dice for Mike Bassett.
Will Mike Bassett deliver?
He's taking Argentina on his pass by Stadler.
Mike Bassett, England manager.
Oh, bollocks! I've shit myself!
I'm glad to say that Colm Bouygues and his glorious Roma jersey in the background and a luscious head of hair now in weeks. What is it, day 72 of lockdown in the Bouygues household? And again, Paul Moore is also with us as well. Lads, how are you getting on?
Not too bad.
I feel very, very inadequate in comparison to Colm's glorious Barnett and his hipster decoration, decorative jersey in the background.
There's always something different when I get Colm up on Zoom. It's always something different in the background. It keeps me guessing.
This is the beauty of doing these things sporadically, because I run out of jerseys otherwise if I didn't set me there.
I've been getting awful stick for putting the odd United jersey up behind me in the Paddy Power half hours that we've been doing over the last couple of weeks, and people just aren't enjoying that. They want me to be a bit more, I don't know, non-biased towards the most hated team in England.
They aren't enjoying it is a great way to describe it.
I don't get it. I think it's fine. It's the 99 Champions League jersey that I put up, so it's a little bit more entertaining than my background. For those who are watching on YouTube at the minute, I am in the off-the-ball offices. I'm the only one that has been in the off-the-ball offices all week, except for Kieran Bradley, who does the odd digital stuff for us. But that's not the important thing. What's in our background isn't important. What is important is what we're going to be discussing tonight, and that's one of the greatest football films of all time. Mike Bassett, England manager. Rewatched it there last night myself and burst out laughing several times. It's a brilliant film. Colm, when did you rewatch it and what was your initial thoughts on rewatching it?
Rewatched it last night as well because it's beautifully on YouTube, the full thing, in quite good quality. So watched it last night, having not seen it for, I'd say, about 5 years. And exactly the same as you, I was bursting out laughing. It's the football equivalent of This Is Spinal Tap. It's the best mockumentary in sport ever. And I won't ruin Paul's answer, but we have varying opinions of it because I was texting Paul last night about it too. But there are honestly, there's at least a half a dozen scenes where I burst out laughing on my own watching it, which I wouldn't do normally for most movies. But then there's also scenes where I'm like, ugh, that didn't age well. It was actually Paul who pointed it out to me and I was like, Jesus, yeah. There is one element, I'll let Paul talk about it because he was one who pointed it out, but there's definitely one element of the storyline I'm like, geez, that took a dark, dark turn. And also the soundtrack is a bit off. There's like the music they use for certain scenes. I'm like, that's an interesting choice. But overall, I loved it. I loved it watching it back. I watched it within a year of it being released originally on a rainy Saturday afternoon with a buddy of mine. And I was like, this thing is revolutionary. This is one of the greatest things ever. But then, you know, 19 years on, I'm like, yeah, it's very much of its time, but I would love another one. I would love a modern equivalent of it.
We'll get into the finer details a little later on, Paul. I'm now on the edge of my seat.
I really did
to see what you and Colm have been discussing while I've been trying my damnedest to get logged into this Zoom call. So what was your take or what was your initial thoughts on rewatching it?
To begin with, I'll have to put my hands up and say, it's not a rewatch for me. This was my very first sitting of Mike Bassett, England manager. As a football fan and a movie fan, I mean, I've got no credentials now. I've lost any sort of cool points I have. But oddly, I found when it as a comedy, when it wasn't trying to be really funny, it still was. Like, a lot of the stuff foreshadowed real events in football. Obviously, we'll get into the details about like the press conferences and how it was inspired by Graham Taylor's tenure and the Impossible Job documentary, which is fantastic. But stuff like even a hotel meltdown in front of the team, as an Irish football fan, we've got plenty of experience of managers losing their rag in front of a group of players. I think even when it really didn't try, it was still oddly funny. But in terms of what we were talking about last week, I think the actual on-pitch action wasn't great. I know it's supposed to be a comedy, so they went a bit caricature-esque with some of the footballers, but some of them hit, some of them didn't. It does feature some great cameos. I mean, Pele and Ronaldo has one word in it, but this is the original Ronaldo, which is just brilliant. I wonder, did they just jump him in the middle of a normal interview, kind of like Dennis Pennis style, like they used to do, and just see if they could just throw him in the middle of a legit interview. There is some really good stuff in it. It touches like the cliche you have of some of the old England manager. You've got Keegan's tenure there. You've got particularly Clough interviewing for the job. I mean, that's overtly done. But as Colm said, there are some gags that you just couldn't do now. And it does take tonally a kind of a weird shift, which for a comedy, it's a hard act for any comedy to judge, but particularly one like this. And also, I do think there are times when it loses the track where Mike Bassett's supposed to be the central character and it floods it with a lot of characters like his assistants. And I get where they're coming from, but I just don't think they land, and they just take away from more of the moments I wanted of Mike Bassett, as opposed to them, who are just a bit too cartoonish, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say that, because, or it's interesting that it was your first watch as well, because I watched this with my housemates, who, for many, it was their first time watching it as well. And the main thing they took from it was how funny it was, and how it almost resembled Big Sam's tenure. If Big Sam had have gotten past 1 or 2 months, how long does Big Sam last again? But that's this is the realistic side of this. This potentially could happen. I'm not saying they're going to hire someone off winning the Mr. Clutch trophy, but there are England managers in the past who, as Mike Bassett says himself, he's the last of the dinosaurs when it comes to England managers. There are still some out there. Colm, you were looking to jump in there. What were you going to say?
Well, I was setting up Paul for his big reveal, but he never made his reveal, which was the bullying of the son in school. And Paul said it to me, and I actually texted him as I was rewatching it, and it right on cue, it starts, the bullying. And that feeds into what Paul was saying, is that the sudden change in tone. It's not even, you know, often you have a bridge in comedy from a hilarious scene, almost like how they do it in Reading in the Years, where the screen fades to black and then something sad is coming, and you get a bridge scene in comedy, but it just hits you, smacks you. Maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing, but as a viewer, and certainly watching it in 2020, you're like, wow, that really hits you hard. And then straight after when the son's being bullied with the shaving of the eyebrows and the wanker written on his forehead and all that, straight back into comedy. And even the way that they deal with those scenes, I wouldn't say we're laughing at the son, but they don't make as much of it as they would have if it was nowadays. They kind of say, oh, he's been bullied because his dad is the England manager, so that's going to happen. And he's very much a victim, and he's left to the side. And probably if it was done nowadays, that would have been explored more. But
you've also got the DUI of the player, which was really tonally strange, because it was almost like you go into a Ken Loachian prison drama when he's scolding his player for driving under the influence. And I was like, okay, this isn't fun anymore. This is actually really serious. So that literally comes within 5 minutes, which takes it away from, you mentioned there, the Norwich thing of the, it starts just insane with the bus breaking down, which genuinely happened. Norwich, when they got promoted back to the Premier League, this actually happened to them. In 2019, their bus stopped. And you've also got him taking over England with the kind of parallels with Jock Stein in 86, when Ferguson had to step in for Scotland there when the manager had a heart attack. So it clearly knows its notes it's taking from. Even we mentioned the Clough, the men and the stuffy throats. And the quote from, was it, my dad was like a father figure to me. I'm thinking, this is just vintage Steve McLaren-esque. Obviously, this was filmed in 01. So McLaren's tenure didn't come in until the start of the Euro 8 campaign. I just think it was so, when it's good, it's almost accidentally good on the nose for just the stupidity of like what is we know as football. But when it moves into the reality stuff, like the bullying, the domestic life, even his wife leaving him, which I know is a byproduct of the pressures of the job, it didn't need it. It just took away from the time you want to see of him as a manager.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the wife narrative was a little bit needless. Like it didn't add to the story. If anything, it kind of took away from it and made the ending slightly strange. We are talking about Mike Bassett, England manager, released in 2001. The mockumentary follows Mike Bassett, aka Ricky Tomlinson, a lower league manager of Norwich, who wins the Mr. Clutch Cup. It was released on DVD with the review saying the best British film since Bridget Jones. So that tells you how high this film is held in esteem. In reviews, it got 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, and IMDb rated it 3.5 stars out of 5. So not too bad in the review section. We're going to get into our review section now, starting with the cast. We're going to start with the main man, first of all. So we can't really look past the main character, Mike Bassett, Ricky Tomlinson. Many people will know him from Royal Family, just a keystone of British comedy. And Colm, I think, were you in the office when Ricky Tomlinson came in to visit? And it was like watching kids in a candy shop, everyone going up trying to get a photo of him. He's such a brilliant comedy star. And this is one of the peaks. This is one of the best things he's ever done, I think.
Yeah, like in the pre-COVID days, we would get someone of note walking into the third floor of Marconi House pretty much every other day. And so you become numb to it. And in my time at Off the Ball, Ricky Tomlinson was one of the ones that transcended the numbness. And everyone was like, oh my God, Ricky Tomlinson there. And there was a presence all of a sudden. And I went over to him and shamelessly asked for a photo, which is on my Instagram account. And I remember when I uploaded the photo, I was thinking, what caption will I use? Will I go for the royal family or will I go for Mike Bassett? And Kieran Bally had the exact same question for himself, because Mike Bassett is so quotable. It's quote heavy. And it has its flaws, which we've already addressed. And I didn't realize it had so many flaws until I watched it back last night. But it's eminently quotable, and that's a great legacy to have as a film. And the thing is with this film is that it was supposed to be out 6 years earlier. It was supposed to come out in the mid-90s. So Johnny Smith and Rob Spratling are the writers, and they did an interview a couple of years ago, and they talked about how it was in production for something like 7 years before it was given the green light. And the timing was actually terrible, because it was released in the end of September 2001, and Sven-Göran Eriksson had just taken over as England manager, and his reputation and stock was at an all-time high. He had just won the league the year earlier with Lazio. They hadn't won the league in a long time. It was England's first foreign manager. He was seen to modernise England's archaic play. And so when Mike Bassett came out, it was kind of like, well, this is the old guard. So if the film had come out a year earlier, it would have been perfect, because that was the end of the Kevin Keegan reign, which didn't go well. And then obviously Graham Taylor with the impossible job in the early 90s. And then subsequently, when Sven left, as Paul said already, Steve McLaren was there. Big Sam with one game. I mean, Big Sam was made for it. So it was, his timing was off, and as a result, it became a cult classic throughout the years. So Ricky Tomlinson is absolutely perfect in it. And the thing about Ricky, and I noted it in my notes, was that he's one of the very few nice people in the film. There's chinkets of it where when he's boarding the train to go to the FAHQ at the start of the film, he lets an old lady off first, and he helps her with her bags. They wouldn't have left that in for no reason at all. It was tiny. It was only 2 seconds. I mean, if you look down and look back up, you'd have missed it. So there were moments where he's clearly the social conscience of the film, because when he and Lonnie Eckhart have the big falling out in the team meeting, he goes to Eckhart calling him a bigot and small-minded. So he's our protagonist, and we're seeing the film through his eyes. So we're sympathetic to Tomlinson. And there's very few actors who do pathos like Ricky Tomlinson. He's perfect for it. He's actually probably an underrated actor. So he's perfect for the role.
Yeah, I think he gets the perfect mix between comedy and emotion. He plays this role phenomenally well. And his delivery, I think he was the perfect cast member for this, because even by his stature, the small, stocky, really British guy, it's such a believable character that this is an old England manager, and the mannerisms that he goes on, the incredible amount of swearing that is in the script really adds to it, because if you don't have that swearing, then you're not really getting into that character that everyone knows, and that's what Mike Bassett is. I think his delivery of the jokes are perfect, and even just the way that he's obviously from Norwich, from Norfolk, and he keeps that sort of not he's not a big city boy character kind of going on through the film. You see it on the train when he talks to one of the train ticket collector. He used to play football with him, or he used to play for a team, and he remembers his name, remembers what he did. And then later on, the way that he interacts with the press, where he's referring to them like, ah, come on, like, let's look at the positives. Why are you looking at the negatives? And we can't understand why these guys are grilling them so much. So I think he's brilliant. Paul, what did you think of Ricky in this film?
Yeah, I think he kind of nails that perfect tone, because he is a buffoon, and he's so hopelessly out of his depth. But there's an art in keeping people on their side, that he's supposed to be cartoonish, but there is, you do feel for him in those bits. Like when he quotes the Rudyard Kipling bit, it is cheesy, but he sells it with that just enough of the pathos and gravity to make you almost, you know, get the goosebumps going. I love the description of him when he got the job. It was 14 clubs and 9 different positions. So this is literally a journey manager in every sense of the word. You know, this is your Alan Pardew, your Alan Kirbishley, your Big Sams, all molded together. And like even the small things we mentioned, like the Bassett's All Sorts cover on one of the red tops, which is what they did with Taylor. Remember they did the turn up, they turned him into it, or they do I Do Not Like Orange, and they had him as an orange. Like you kind of feel from those moments when you see this man and the reputation being ridiculed, because at its essence, it is a kind of a warm celebration of football and kind of the aspirational values of what it is to play for your country or manage your country, which if you're a purist is still should be the highest pinnacle of the game. And I don't think in any bit in the film, even when he does the ludicrous training and the caricature players, you never get the sense that this is a piss take. You get the sense that this means an awful lot to him, which Tomlinson as an actor, it's a credit to him, because it is slapstick, it is stupid. You've got like the striker Rufus Sousa, they can't hit a barn door, or you've got all the caricature centre half and the rough as nails and the David Seaman keeper. But in the middle of it, you do need some sort of emotional resonance and truth to kind of anchor it all, so the absurdity can kind of can be a bit more absurd if you've got some drama at the heart of it. And I think he sells it really, really well. And you do get the vibe, like we've all seen so many England managers stand up in front of the press, downtrodden, beaten, depressed. Like those scenes they literally are a documentary. Because we've seen, like if you watch the Taylor one in particular, they're ravenous and they're just tearing him from limb. And the defiance he has in that moment at the end when he stays up and saying, we're playing 4-4, F and 2. You mean I believe it? I go with him, you know?
Yeah. So there's a lot of characters in this that I actually didn't like on second watch or third watch. And they're probably in there just to have a backstory to Mike Bassett, but I don't really think they add anything to the film. For example, Amanda Redman is Karina Bassett, his wife, who has been with him through this journeyman career and almost immediately gets fed up with him being the England manager after like three games and leaves him, and then gets emotional when he finally wins a game and finally says he's staying on. I don't think she adds much to it. I don't really think the character's great. Bradley Walsh has to get a nice mention in this. Just the way that he repeats everything that the press says, and even everything that Mike Bassett says as well, and just carries on. He does no personality of his own. He's a nice little touch in this, if you know Bradley Walsh. Now, I wonder what people would have thought of Bradley Walsh when it did come out in 2001. But certainly now, since we know him from The Chase, it probably ages better than it would have come across at the time.
I really like his character. I know Paul has other opinions about it, but I like him because he is Phil Neal if you watch an Impossible Job, because Phil Neal is Graham Taylor's assistant, and he just literally just repeats everything Taylor says. And I think Bally Walsh, Dodsy as his character is called, David Dodds, the name is perfect as well, the double D, David Dodds, Dodsy, because I think the comedic gold in it is the subtlety in that he repeats verbatim what Mike Bassett says, but he always adds another word just to mix it up a bit, like, so you know, so Mike Bassett will be like, come on lads, come on, and then Dazzy be like, yeah, come on lads, come on, let's go, come on lads, back again. And the one thing I did like about him that I thought, this is a bit more about the personality of Dazzy, it's only tiny, is after the first game, the very first game that Mike Bassett had, the qualifier against Poland, where they lose 2-1. So presumably the Monday morning, they're doing the video analysis. They're going to review the match. So they're all sitting down, the three of them. And Lonnie Eckhart has the car magazine out, so he doesn't care. Like, he's showing Mike about the latest Honda. And Dodsy's ready to go. So come on, Dodsy, we can't put it off anymore. Put the video on. They put the video on. They're tipping off England against Poland, Mike's first game. And they tip off, and there's a subtle comment from Dotsky. He says, come on, lads. It's so pointless to do it. And then within 5 seconds, it's taped over. And then he just said, oh, no. And they, you know, Dotsky, what's happened? It was like, oh, the wife's taped it over. That's perfect. Because that would happen in Dotsky's household. Like, he wouldn't be explicit enough to the wife. He wouldn't say to the wife, don't tape over this now. It's really important. We're analysing Mike's first game in charge. We really need to watch this. He would have just, you know, he wouldn't have said anything to her. He would have just had it lying around and she would have gone off and done that. And it leaves the viewer's imagination to think that presumably she's a female version of Dodsy as well. that she would have been like, oh, I'll just tape over this tape lying around. So I really like that, Z. And I like the fact, too, that he's, you know, like, he's like an animal farm. He's just, like, blindly loyal. Just loyal for no reason. He doesn't even know why he's being loyal. He just is. That's why I love that.
Paul, I'm interested to hear why you didn't like him.
Yeah, it's a bit of the Champ Kind about him, isn't he? Just repeating instinctively what's told him. I just feel that an awful lot of the film came on Mike's pressures, and none of them, there was no moment when they kind of rally around him. It's almost like they just throw him to the wolves, that it all comes down on him. Particularly Lonnie, obviously the stick is the car salesman, but he's a bit of an arsehole, to be honest. Like, he had to be talked into the job. He had no interest in being there. And also, like, never really felt the need to kind of take Mike out of the firing line a bit, or stand up, or even like their coaching techniques. Let's face it, he lost all the balls, which is one of the more interesting coaching sessions you're ever going to see in your life. But no, I just felt they weren't inherently nice people. They were just, they were terrible at their job, and also couldn't get the sense of Mike's marriage falling apart around him, his job, and in a very tenuous situation. And also, they weren't good with the players. I thought they were like traffic cones or something. They were just there. They had very little involvement in chatting with the players.
The one criticism I have of the two characters is that they didn't need to be either completely submissive or not interested. One of them should have been on his side more, because we didn't need to be any more sympathetic towards Mike Bassett as it was, because we knew he had an impossible job on and he wasn't fit for it. So they didn't need to have the two men who were supposed to be closest to him professionally either not being able to do it or not wanting to do it. So that, like, it would have been more realistic if they either had a third person on board, or one of the two lads were actually genuinely interested and capable of contributing to England improving. So it was kind of felt like it was left to Mike Bassett to do it all himself. And he was against everybody, including Jeffrey Lightfoot, the chairman, or the head of the FA, sorry. Everybody was against Bassett, like, with the exception of Tonka, the Gaza of the film.
So it's Philip Jackson that plays Lonnie Urquhart, his assistant manager. What did we make of the whole car salesman narrative and jokes that surrounded that? I thought it didn't really fit in with the film, and he didn't really play a role in any of the football.
Yeah, well, I don't know why Mike Bassett was so determined to get this guy on board. That's never explained. We don't know why. It's only because I think he knows him for a long time. But presumably that's why Graham Taylor got Larry McMenemy on the board for England as well, as that he knew him a long time. Because if you look at his CV in real life, it wasn't great. He managed Southampton for over a decade, and that was about it. And after the England assistant role in the early 90s, he kind of went out of the game. So we don't really, it's not justified why Bassett wants to go after him so much. Presumably there are others out there. But maybe we're using Eckhart's character to showcase that Bassett has very few contacts in the game, because he's told he can bring in whatever coach he likes, and he only knows these two lads. And he only goes with what he knows, because he's like this small-minded English man. So they're, I'll just go with what I know in 4-4-2 and all that. So I thought the car salesman thing was funny. I thought it was unrealistic, because it wasn't like the England job was a Sunday league job. Like, this is the biggest job in the country. So why would you have that little interest? And then, if you're Mike Bassett, why would you hire someone who has such little interest? So that was the flaw in it, that it would have been good if they had him being this car lover primarily, but literally every scene with him is him being a car salesman.
Yeah, like I thought it was a little bit cheesy, and for comedic value, it didn't really add a lot to a film that is just packed full of brilliant jokes. So, you know, last week we kind of went through the cast and the plot and the realism, but since this is a mockumentary, it's supposed to be a comedy, it's supposed to be unrealistic, I don't think there's much point in doing that this week. I don't really want to talk about the players themselves, because the character development of them isn't great, and they don't really go that deep other than one of them being an absolute killer of a centre back, one of them being silly, one of them being on the phone to his girlfriend all the time, and one of them just being really reckless and an alcoholic, essentially, and they kind of make a joke about that. So we'll move on. We'll touch on them later on, because they are involved in some of the more funny scenes in this movie. So the top scenes for me, I'm going to list them out, and I'll give Paul, since this was your first time watching it, your opportunity to choose which one you want to start with. So it starts off Norwich Parade winning the cup, the comedic value of the bus going down the motorway. Then you have the scene with the angry English fans and him listening to what they have to say. Then the training session before Mexico, the one that they lose the balls. The meeting after the Mexico game, which is the one where the assistant manager gets a sack. We have the press conference before the Argentina game, the picking of the team, Benson and Hedges, the Pele scene, and the expletive dressing room scene. So, Paul, where do you want to start?
I'm going to have to go for the three cheers for Ramirez.
It's so funny.
Just because as Irish football fans, and for the week that was in it, we had the anniversary of Saipan. Obviously, this is filmed 2001, but Jesus Christ, you might as well have a crystal ball. Just what went and we were talking about Lonnie there adding nothing to the film. This is the one moment when he actually doesn't talk about cars, and Jesus Christ, it gets personal. You get the feeling this was building up for a while, and it encapsulates all the lunacy of what's previously gone on. Obviously, you've got the crap football played, you've got the farce of the open top bus parade, but just it does strike a balance of pure comedy value of the England players cheering for the Mexicans, and then you've got this personal relationship falling apart. So for me, that was that's definitely my standout moment. But you mentioned just the cast. I will say one thing. The MVP in this for me is Martin Bashir, the narrator, who we'd all know is a Channel 4 pretty renowned journalist in the 90s. He had interviews with Princess Diana and Michael Jackson. So he was very well known. But for me, because the mockumentary style is the way it's filmed, he really holds it all together, because you do get a sense that where there's some gravitas and there's some real journalistic integrity and weight behind this, with all the madness unfolded. So for me, like, I never lost touch of the fact that the way it's filmed, it almost does feel like fly on the wall. So for me, he kind of, even his tone, just interjecting, brings it all together, think that, oh my God, this could really happen. And as we all know, as Irish football fans, a meltdown of epic proportions did happen in a hotel, in a World Cup. And I don't think Mick Keane and Mick was as funny as Mike Bassett and his assistants.
Yeah, so the scene that Paul is referring to, I think we'll track back, and we won't do this in order, because the scene I want to talk is before this Mexico game. But England have just been beaten 4-0 by Mexico, and they go into a team hotel. It's disaster, and the team's on edge. The team's more or less going out. Mike Bassett is on the line. His job's on the line, and he's on the edge. He comes in. The players are acting as if nothing's happening. He comes in absolutely raging, throws a phone on the ground, tells everyone to shut up, says, right, and they set it up. He says, right, that's a negative side out of a positive. And Bradley Walsh pops up with, on a positive side, those Mexicans were bloody brilliant, weren't they? Which leads to the assistant manager saying, if that Ramirez doesn't win player of the year, there's no justice in this world. And then they go on to give three cheers to Ramirez. It's an absolutely brilliant scene.
That scene, the escalation in the fighting there is Mike Bassett's fault, because he's supposed to hold court. So he starts off the meeting, which is also really funny, when the David Beckham character, Carl Fletcher, known in Dream Team circles would be known as Carl Fletcher, is on the phone. And then Ricky goes over, Mike Bassett goes over, and he says, "Will you fuck off?" and throws the phone away. And then he's like, no, we got that settled with. But he should have then been the guy as the manager to say, all right, these are the positives. But he doesn't know either. So he's like, all right, Dadsy, take it away. You can't give the floor to Dadsy. He doesn't know what to say. So and then you see the cogs turning in Dadsy's mind, which is brilliant, which is great by Bradley Walsh, because he sits there and he has to think on his feet here really fast. And he was like, well, well, what about the Mexicans? And then everyone's talking about them. And there's a great moment in that scene where there's obviously, it's about to get very personal between Lonnie and Mike, and the camera is at the back behind the players, so it zooms in as the two lads stand up, and Rufus Smalls, the striker who can't score, there's a great subtle image of him. He's in the bottom right of the screen, and he looks back at the camera as if to say, I hope they don't catch this on camera, because he knows it's about to happen. So there's actually really brilliant subtle moments in the film that you'd forget about, because the standout scenes are so memorable 20 years on.
Yeah, there are so many scenes in this film that are great. We are talking about Mike Bassett, England manager here on Team 33 with Colin Buig and Paul Moir. We're going to take a quick break, lads, and we will come back with some more of the memorable scenes from this film. Stay tuned.
That's the honest points out of the way, so let's talk through the positive points, shall we? Okay, Dodsey.
Well, on the positive side, them Mexicans were bloody brilliant, weren't they?
I tell you what, if that Ramirez doesn't win player of the tournament, then there's no justice.
Hey, three cheers for Ramirez. Hip hip!
Hooray!
Hip hip!
Hooray!
Shut up! You see it in the bloody Mexicans? We're England!
All right, keep your hair on, Mike.
Keep me hair on? Bloody hell, the newspapers are calling me a twat. The wife's about to leave me. We're going to get knocked out the bloody World Cup and you're singing three cheers for Ramirez. Someone's not got any bloody hair left.
No need to take that attitude.
I'm going out of my mind here, lad. What are you doing to help me apart from locking all the bloody footballs in the Opal?
You got a bit of resentment there, Mike. Might as well get it off your chest.
I think you will, as a matter of fact. Thank you very much indeed. See you. You're just a waste of space.
That's how you feel, is it?
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else. You're a small-minded bigot.
Anything else in the locker there?
Well, mate? Just the one. You know that bloody day you car you stole me? Well, it's an absolute fucking disgrace.
Right, that's it.
Oh!
Lonnie Urquhart is sacked with immediate effect, leaving Bassett without an assistant manager and a nose broken in two places.
All right, welcome back to Team 33. And a call here with you, and I'm joined in the line by Colin Buig and Paul Moir because we are chatting Mike Bassett, England manager. It's our second week of our film reviews. If you want to listen back to any of this show or find the other one, you can get it on YouTube at youtube.com/offtheball, or you can find us in the OTB podcast network as well on offtheball.com. So we just spoke about the meeting post the Mexico game, the England game that they lost 4-0. That was one of your favorite scenes, Paul. So I want to chat about the game itself and the Mexico game and everything building up to it. So England need to win this game, or they think they need to win this game to qualify into the last 16 of the World Cup. It's not going well. We don't see the first half of the game, but we do see the halftime meeting in the dress room. And this is my favorite scene, because this is where I'm brought back to any dressing room in Sunday League, anytime. The manager, I think this is the most expletives I've ever seen in one full scene of any film. There must be at least 16, 17 F words thrown into this. It's expletive heavy. I couldn't play it out in the radio. It's brilliant. And the thing that brings it all together is he goes on this rant for about 2 or 3 minutes, giving out to them, saying that there's tons of people out there that would kill to wear that jersey. And he curses them, says they need to get their act together. And then the perfect timing from the narrator comes in at the end. England lose 4-0. It's an epic scene.
Yeah, it's one of the most fantastically delivered lines in comedy history by Martin Bashir. And obviously it's just completely intended to be factual and informative, but it's just brilliantly done. And also the fact that they cut away to fans, disgruntled fans, is perfect. I'd love to know the behind the scenes of that scene and how many takes it took, because it's some performance by Ricky. I mean, the passion he builds in himself, and like, he used to play football. I mean, he told us that himself when he was in with us that day off the ball, because he knew that we covered sport, and he was telling us that he was a very good goalkeeper. So I could imagine him being in these dressing rooms, especially back in the day when no fouls were suffered. So I imagine he was just channeling that. A bit like Tom Von Lauder channeled Nidge in Love Hate, was he learned that accent by the sight of football pitches, because obviously he's like posh Dublin Vore, and he did this amazing Dublin accent. And I get that Mike Bassett went back to his football days and was like, I'm just going to channel the manager that used to give out to me. But I feel like even throwing the drinks bucket at the David Seaman keeper, I feel like that was improv or something, that he just saw this actor looking down and he went for that. And there's a great moment where he's saying in the same direction, it's kind of to his right, but then he switches to his left at the last minute and he's like shaking when he switches to the left, but his body is convulsing to go with his words. It's like, now he may have just done that instinctively and that wasn't intended at all, but it's just a brilliant scene, and you would completely overlook that as a film fan, because you would think, oh yeah, obviously he had to get that annoyed because he was under severe pressure going into the game. The press were on his case. He was losing 2-0. He knew he had to win. So, but if you ask an actor to go out now and illustrate all of that pent-up aggression into this one scene, it's not that easy to do. So again, it goes back to Ricky being being unbelievable in that role. But it's not my favourite scene, though.
So tell me what it is, then.
Well, there's two for me. I don't think you can overstate how funny the Norwich parade is. Because
I didn't really find it that funny at all.
Oh, I thought it was amazing, because I can almost see it coming that they're going to take a wrong turn here. And it was just the narration, it was just so factual. There was no, they weren't trying to be funny at all, that it went off to, he's just banging on the bus going, you're going to the dual carriageway. And it wasn't even so much the physical humor of them shivering, which is real traditional comedy, but it was more the banging on the side of the bus and the fact that he knew, like Mike Bassett knows where it's headed, the dual carriageway. They're already in the town when that's taking the wrong turn. So it's clever, because he obviously knows the town really well. So he knows what direction they're going. And then when he comes back, they're saying, there's a roundabout up here, turn around, which is beautifully Sunday League. So I love that scene. And then the other one was his first training session with England. And I don't know why he does it, because, and again, it just proves to show how out of his depth he is, the whole thing. When he was like, for all those players born the first half of the year, go to the left, or the second half, go to the right. It's such a stupid way. I was like, this is such a stupid way. Like, how would that make sense anyway? Like, how would that fall in line anyway?
And that's a real management technique. That I've been in a team that they have done that. So that's the beauty of it. If you've played Sunday League football,
I have for a long time, and that never happened, because you're still going to get an imbalance. But I just love the actors who play the players are brilliant, because they like, you know what it's like. Like, we all know what it's like playing those teams. Like, your head is down. You're like, I'm born this side. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to stay here. And then I like that he picks out individuals. Like, who does he ask? Wacko, what's your birthday? January, boss. And they're so polite and official about them. February, boss. I was born the second half of the year, and nobody says a word. All right, the first half of the month, this side, second half of the month, this side, and then everyone thinks about it and goes. It's brilliant. Like, all of these, I love that part of it, because the Mexico dressing room scene is probably the most famous, but I know that to death. Like, it's like talking about Roy Keane as a Cork man. It's just done. Whereas I love the Dennis Irwin scenes, we'll call them, is the more subtle ones I really love. And I just love that, because that's so realistic. The whole thing is so realistic, and we believe it. Like Paul was saying, he's slapstick, but he is believable as a manager.
There's a great scene, Bill, on the trophy parade when it cuts them and they're going against the wind and all their barnets are like massively blown up. It's like, it's the least glamorous thing ever. I was expecting kind of a Sergio Ramos-esque trophy drop underneath the wheels or something. It genuinely happened with Norwich in 2019. When they were going through the town, the bus stopped and they ended having to change onto one of those red sightseeing buses. and it had to happen to Norwich. Like, Mike Bassett's genuine club. So, you know, this is life imitating art stuff.
I don't even find that the physical part of that scene funny with the hair up, because I thought that's very kind of Home Alone 2 with the hair up. Like, and that's not that funny to me. It's what he says. It's his knowledge of the town. He knows where they're going wrong, like, and he can't stop it. That, to me, encapsulates the character that we learn about as it goes on. And I just think there's so many great, he has so many great lines, like when he's describing Wacko, out of the 26 international games he's played for England, he's only completed 5. But he says it so apologetically, like he's only completed 5.
The physical comedy side of things, like the hair, that's just a classic British comedy technique. Like, I mean, you could be watching an episode of Fawlty Towers for you could get lost in it. It's only fools and horses. That's where this film and the comedy in it and the actors in it belong, really. And there are so many brilliant scenes. I mean, I haven't even spoken about, I know we're kind of all over the shop in terms of the timeline of this film, but even the press conference before that Argentina game, when the press are asking him, do you think you can win this Argentina game? And he's like, well, I can't bloody say, can I? I can't predict the future. And they're like, yeah, but you're the England manager. You should be able to answer this question. He's like, yeah, but you're asking me to predict the future. so I'm asking you, what do you think? And five journalists, all of them say they don't. He's like, well, if you don't believe me, when, what are you asking me for? What's the point? Yeah. And then tells them to F off and walks out of the press conference. It's brilliant, because I think there are so many managers out there that would actually love to do that.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why it's good. And there's another line as well, which is great, where it's like, well, obviously I want them to win, but I don't know. obviously I want them to win, but that's brilliant because it's true. I mean, every manager in the world, whether you're Sunday League or Jurgen Klopp, believes that. But you don't articulate that. That's why that scene's great. I mean, it's probably on the bad side of unrealistic, because even though he's so slapstick, he's not going to say that. But it's still great, because it's obviously exactly what he's thinking out loud.
And then there's the obvious ones, which are just there to, they're pure gags. The picking the team on the back of a cigarette box, and the I don't know what you would call it, the team liaison officer picks two players from third division, Rob Benson and Tony Hedges, because they're on the back of Benson and Hedges box. Like that's an all timer scene that had me almost wetting myself laughing. But I suppose we have to talk about the most famous scene in this film, and they kind of lay the background to this, that his father was a big Kipling fan earlier on in the film, and then the scene happens where he's on antidepressants, and he goes out into town and has a few lagers mixed with some Jaeger bombs or some Sambuca chasers, sorry, as he describes them. Pelly walks in, the whole thing is caught on camera, his career's on the line, he's been almost forced to resign. He comes to the press conference and says, I've had to make the hardest decision of my life. I'm going to stay on as England manager. Which,
that's a great story, actually. Yeah.
That's a brilliant gag, first of all. Yeah. And then the press, eventually, they're like, oh, just leave. You're out of your depth. You don't belong here. And he bursts into Kipling, which is, it's emotional. It brings you in there. But like every good comedy, there's a gag at the end of the emotional side. And he ends with saying, we're going to be playing 4-4, F and 2. The best thing about that is the team that I currently play on, our manager refuses to play any other formation than 4-4-2. So that scene itself is a running joke amongst our football team.
It's you know who's brilliant in that too? It's Phil Jupitus, who plays the main tabloid journalist, because he gets it spot on. That is spot on what that culture was like at that time. And bear in mind, that movie was supposed to be out 5 or 6 years earlier, so it would have been mid-90s journalism. And they were horrible and ruthless, the managers, because the comment there that crosses the line with Phil Jupitus is that he does have points at the start of that press conference where he says, like, the team have no shape, there's no 1-2s, there's no skill involved, what's the plan, there's no strategy. But then he takes it too far in a typical English press way and says, even your wife has left you, there's nothing keeping you here. And then immediately you're back onto Bassett's side. Yeah. Because you know Jupitus is right, but you're immediately now back onto this guy's side now. And I thought he was brilliant, because there's other press guys in that. There's two or three other minor characters, but he's perfect, absolutely perfect as the tabloid British journalist in the 90s, who you think actually, when it comes to it, really wants the team to do badly because it's good for his business.
Yeah, exactly. It's a brilliant scene, and it encapsulates that time very, very well, in a very comedic way as well. So we're getting to the end of this chat. We're chatting about Mike Bassett, England manager. I suppose we'll do our ratings. It's harder to rate this film because you're going on with a normal film, you can rate the cast, rate the scene, rate the plot, but this is a pure comedy, so it's hard to do that. So I think we'll have to just go with an overall rating for this film. I think Ricky Tomlinson deserves almost full marks in this. He's a 9 out of 10. Comedic value, I think it's a solid 8 to 9 out of 10 as well. And the one thing that lets it down is probably the questionable acting at times when it comes to the on pitch stuff. So I would say this is a solid 7.5 for me.
On,
I'm going to say 6.5 for me, just because I think they went a bit too cartoonish with the football. Didn't really buy into it, although some of the stuff was nice, like they had stock footage from USA 94. I think they had Colombia against Romania, and they had Sweden against Russia, and so they had some of the stuff. I think Pelé's cameo was genius, and the recurring gag of him, who do you think can win the World Cup? Well, usually it's Brazil, Argentina, Germany. he gets through all 31 countries. The press just wanted to say England, so they have their headline. Pelé thinks England, and he's like, well, who else? Ronaldo's one line was fantastic. Tomlinson is very, very good in it, but I just felt it had far too many cartoonish gags. But what really worked for me is kind of when it didn't even try, but just because the absurdity of football, and you can read between the lines and project your own football knowledge into it, like, this is so crazy. And you kind of just reflected, like, Jesus, like, football, you'd have to be literally insane to be a football manager. And also, I did love the piss take montage when they had the Egypt game, which reminded me of like Ireland, Egypt, and UAE.
Ireland, Egypt, yeah.
They were just glorifying simple touches like a step over, a pass, because there was nothing to talk about in the game. And like, as a journalist, we've all seen crap matches, and you somehow have to sell them. You're like, well, nothing went on. It was crap. So I kind of enjoyed that bit. But yeah, 6.5 for me, because some parts of it felt like really good sketches they were thrown together, but not as coherent as a film. But like standalone scenes, yes. But just when it tried to get serious with like a narrative and a plot and just the problems we mentioned about the wife and the son being bullied, it just didn't work as a whole. But some very memorable scenes, but not as didn't work as a collectively as a whole for me.
Colm, I'll leave the final review to you.
I'll go 8 out of 10 because in its field as a football film, I don't know if there's many better. And that's not to say that it's not flawed. And actually, watching it back last night, I still love it. I don't love it as much as I thought, but I still think it's great. And I give it 8 out of 10. Almost all because of Ricky Tomlinson's performance, which is brilliant. I also think the actor who played Kevin Tonkinson, Tonka, is fantastic as the Gaza character, because he actually looks like he can play a bit, that actor, because they show him dribbling beyond time. So he obviously has something, but he even though he bears no physical resemblance to Paul Gascoigne at all, you are watching Gaza, and he's obviously supposed to be Gaza, and he's perfect because you actually do want him to go on and score that goal against Argentina. And you are sad for him when he gets dropped in the corridor of the hotel after what he's done. And what I love about him too is that the first time we see him is in the pub when they're doing the dentist chair, which is obviously what Gaza did before Euro 96. But also when he sits down and it's a close-up scene of the two of them, of Mike Bassett and Tonka. And it's the very same camera setup as in Trainspotting at the end with Begbie and Renton in the last scene, or the second last scene, when they're face to face in the pub. It's the exact same lighting. It's very dark and there's two of them. And I love that Tonka's whispering that he still has it. He's like, I've got it, Pat. He's like, I don't know where it is. It's like, I've lost it. I've just misplaced it, but I have it. I have it. So it's those little performances that are great. I would have liked to have seen more of Steve Harper, who's Carl Fletcher, who plays Bex, because Bex was so central to everything England did at that time. So I would like to see that character play out more. So character development wasn't great. The son's bullying was whitewashed way too much, because they either had to do it properly or not do it at all. And it is like a sketch show put together, that Paul said. That's a great analysis, because it's true. So despite all those flaws, I'm going to still give it 8 out of 10 because it's eminently quotable and it will stand the test of time, even though it's completely outdated. That's why I give it 8 out of 10.
Fair enough. I think with 7.5, 6.5 and 8 out of 10, we'll settle on 7 out of 10. Solid. Can't be. It's a strong film. I thought it was brilliant. I would agree with Colm, though. I didn't like it as much now as I previously thought I did. But I will say my MVP from this is Gabby Logan, because I think for such a serious journalist now, to be able to pull that off, I don't think she would be able to star in this film now. And she's gone on to do brilliant stuff as well. So I thought she was fantastic. She plays her role brilliantly. And just they actually encapsulate the whole football TV show during a major tournament perfectly, with the cheesy planetary intro to it and the ex-professional talking down to a dodgy Skype line to the manager. So I thought that was brilliant.
So that's pretty much us done here on Team 33 for this evening. Thanks very much for listening. If you want to listen back to any of that show, catch it in the OTB podcast network on offtheball.com. Just look us up, Team 33, and you can also see Colin Buick's beautiful Barnet on youtube.com/offtheball if you want to have a look at that as well. If you want to listen back to any of our previous shows, find us on Off the Ball, or you can get us on Twitter as well at Team33. That's all spelled out in letters. And if you have a film that you think deserves our review, has to be a football film, send us into them at Team33 on Twitter. We will be back again, same time, same place. But until then, take it away, Johan.